What's up, you guys? Sean Ross Sapp. This is Fightful Select. This is the Backstage Report podcast. For those of you new to this show, I source this from the Fightful Wrestling Weekly. This show is primarily exclusive news that came from Fightful, either that has been reported or that we are going to publish in the coming weeks. In addition, I also update you on our resources section, which includes stats, injury updates, and roster updates, including releases, contracts, all the like. But let's get right into it. We have more than the usual 1,000 words in the Fightful Wrestling Weekly, which has been tradition of late. But we had so much on Deonna, I actually had to split it up this week because that interview I did with Deonna Purrazzo was very in-depth. I think that maybe the Jon Moxley interview that I did in January got as much reception. I mean, obviously, the Jon Moxley interview did insane traffic. We're at almost 100,000 views on that. And the Deonna one wasn't quite there. But the reception that I got, the people that have been tagging myself and Deonna, it went up there along with the Moxley interview. And I can't tell you how much that means to me. It shows these wrestlers that you guys are listening and that it's worth talking to us. So I want to thank you guys a lot for that. It means a lot to me that you all are willing to do that for us, whether it's for us or not. I appreciate that you guys do it. So a big thank you all for that. Either way, let's get into this point of it. Deonna Purrazzo, we have a couple more articles coming out this week on her interview. So she and Chelsea Green had no idea if they were being called up in December. They were just brought to TV multiple times without any real information or direction or anything like that. And no details for weeks after the matches as well, which left Deonna in limbo because she either wanted to leave NXT or work on Raw. She was brought to Raw a couple of times and they weren't told anything. Deonna told me that she wasn't really ready to sign anywhere just right out of the gate and wants to feel out the landscape of pro wrestling before she jumps right in. She admittedly hasn't paid as much attention to the indies as a whole. Instead, she's focused on the places that she was familiar with. As far as not signing anywhere, she said that the WWE process may have tainted her a little bit in that regard. But she said that she is close friends with Madison Rayne, and she believes that Madison would help her get into Impact Wrestling if she wanted to. And the things that Tessa and Taya have been able to do in Impact Wrestling does leave her more open to working there. She knows she isn't as confined. She knows that there's always room to grow and always room to do other things and improve your situation there creatively, as opposed to some of the other places that you can go and work. Where there are significant limitations. We talked a lot about her Ring of Honor deal too, which brought a lot more clarity to it because a couple of years ago, I was always hearing from people in the company and even outside the company that Deonna Purrazzo was one of the people in Ring of Honor championing the Women of Honor division. She actually had to wait out her Ring of Honor deal before signing with WWE and admitted that they were actually fearful of it being contract tampering, they being WWE. But she said if she's going to pack up and head to Orlando in July, she had to know by mid-June what the hell was going on and needed to know the terms and to make sure that she was going to be able to make a living even. And she needed to know what the contract was. WWE did not want to give her those terms on the possibility of it being tampering. And she picked her battles when it came to wrestling it all in. She wanted to work all in, but that's one of the things she had to give up. She didn't want to pass up on that 6 weeks of possible TV time and possibly getting paid. And as it turns out, it didn't matter. She did say that she tried to negotiate a contract with Ring of Honor before WWE, but at the time, Ring of Honor was only interested in giving standard across-the-board pay for women at the time. And that was an issue that a lot of the women had. I know that that's one of the issues that Kelly Klein had last year during her her disagreements with Ring of Honor. Deonna also said that she had emailed higher-ups in Ring of Honor about the popularity of Women of Honor on YouTube, trying to establish credibility for the Women of Honor title, by having the champion travel the world and a lot of different things. And she considers Women of Honor at that point of time a vanity project. But she tried really hard to get women a meaningful spot on the card. She thinks the company could have done better creatively for women if they couldn't financially as a way to make that up for them. But she liked how things were looking for Ring of Honor. Before all their events got canceled, they had contacted a lot of really good, talented women and put them in place for a tournament for the new title. And unfortunately, that got canned. Personally, I would say there's little to no chance that Deonna ends up in Ring of Honor. I would say there is a slim to okay chance she ends up in AEW. I know that she has people in AEW that want her there. And personally, I see Impact as a likely landing point. Now, you got to remember, she's been on TV for a very, very long time. She knows what she's doing and could probably fit in with that company really well. While we're on the topic of WWE, I had spoken to Andrade for an interview like a while back that probably won't see the light of day. There were some big language barrier issues that we had to overcome, but you've probably heard me reference this interview a few times, but I finally was able to kind of track it down and gain a little bit of clarity for it and look at what he was talking about and what I was talking about. I probably won't publish the interview, but I don't think that it's a surprise that Charlotte's been helping him out a lot in the interviews and the second language and all that. He had done a full media row with dozens of interviews in his second language. I had always been told that he asked Vince McMahon what he could do to improve his position, and he was told to learn English, so he has been. He spoke of the tradition and history of the mask in Mexico and says that he wears a necklace with his old mask on it, and his character ripped the mask of Rey Mysterio off because he wanted something to end Mysterio with. He was personally angry when he lost his own mask, so from a character standpoint, he wanted that to happen to Rey Mysterio as well. He also specified that even though he grew up in Mexico, WWE was always his dream. He grew up in Mexico wanting to be a WWE superstar, and he admitted there were some adjustments that he had to overcome. There was the style of in-ring work. In Mexico, you got to roll a lot more. The ring is a lot different. The cameras are a lot different. You have cameras placed in different spots. You have a lot more in WWE. And he says the personality has been a big adjustment for him, which, even though it's been an adjustment, it's hard to imagine that that's been that tough of an adjustment for him, right? Because he's so natural. Like, we aren't even thinking about suspenders Andrade at this point. Cain Velasquez, I was told he was very well received by people in the locker room and seemed more interested in being one of the guys than Goldberg or Brock Lesnar. He was released along with many others, but he wasn't publicized. We'll have more on this in the contract updates spot of the show, but his contract was set to run until fall of 2022, and that didn't end up happening. Jinder Mahal, initially, his return date was listed as January 2020, last year. When he tore up his leg, they had hoped to have him back by January. Inexplicably, his date was moved up internally to November 2019. Jeff Hardy's was too, for some reason. But it is worth noting that in the past, Tommaso Ciampa has outright told me that there's a lack of communication between wrestlers and the people who run those lists internally for WWE. So I don't know what that means, but that's just something that I noticed when I would get those lists last year. Had a huge interview with RJ City that just dropped. I mean, I'm not going to sit here and pretend there's not a ton of wrestling stuff there, but RJ and I always have very fun conversations, and it's worth a watch. It's worth a watch, even if you don't watch the entire 51 minutes. Now, the thing is, I was supposed to interview him a few times. He kind of busted my balls on social media because a couple weeks ago I said, hey, let's do a video interview. Well, then all the releases happened and work got crazy. But before that, I was supposed to interview him in Tampa. Obviously, that couldn't happen because of COVID-19. But before that even, I was supposed to interview him in Winston-Salem, North Carolina, where myself and Jeremy went to cover WrestleCade. But David Arquette pulled out, and because they're a package deal, RJ City got pulled too. And RJ joked that Arquette has fuck you money, but he doesn't. So Arquette is just actually fucking RJ City. He says that there have actually been indie promoters who have tried to get Mario Cantone to be RJ's manager, but the money is nowhere near where it needed to be to make that type of thing happen. The Revival. Oh boy, was there more to the WWE trademark report that had been out there. Oh my God. So I did my due diligence and followed up on WWE opposing some trademarks. So I asked around, and Scott Dawson's deal was originally set to expire in April, as we had kind of mentioned, for months and months and months. Dash's was up in June. However, they were going to add significant time to Dawson, who is now Dax Harwood, his contract, and extended him out beyond where now Cash Wheeler was. So WWE gave the Revival an out if the duo signed over a bunch of trademarks that Wheeler and Harwood had spent their own money to require or acquire. I'm told like in the thousands of dollars they spent. So the release was finalized shortly before the announcement was made publicly, but both sides had actually been working on it for quite a while and going back and forth. So long story short, WWE was extending Scott Dawson's contract out even more months than what had been reported. They had not been paying these two guys, at least regularly. They had stopped because they had exceeded their downside guarantee. They said, well, if you sign over several of these trademarks, then we'll let you go. So the Revival effectively paid to get out of their contract. I mean, it wasn't an outright pay, but they spent money on these trademarks, then had to sign them over to get out of their deals when they did. Unbelievable. It is now ECW month on Fightful. We had our first ECW interview drop. Had a great talk with Justin Credible about leaving WWF and joining ECW. He was spinning his wheels as Aldo Montoya and not going anywhere, and knew that the gimmick sucked and he could contribute a lot more. He had the chance to join WCW because he knew Scott Hall and Kevin Nash, and they were friendly. A lot of people will say that Aldo Montoya was an affiliate of the Click, so to speak, and they had been rocking with the NWO for almost a year at that point when Credible asked for his release. But Vince McMahon outright said no. He didn't want WCW to pick him up. Instead, Vince offered to send him to USWA to learn to work as a heel. Then when ECW did some work with USWA, Chris Candido, the former Skip, got him a job with ECW, and Vince just went ahead and signed his contract over to Paul Heyman. Pretty wild the way that works out. He told me, he being Credible, that he was intimidated asking Vince McMahon for his release. He thought that Vince McMahon was going to kill him, he said. But he said that Vince was always accessible to him across his three runs in the company. And he thought that he did think that Vince would blow up on him for asking to go to WCW, but he also remembers being given the land of opportunity speech, and which he says was commonplace then. But he said that Jim Ross and Vince McMahon were always available when he needed him, and thinks that Vince McMahon is very fair, but admitted that Vince is a nut and expects as much out of his performers as he does out of himself. We closed by speaking about WWE ECW, which he thought should have been closer to what we see out of NXT today. Well, the next interview coming up is with Mikey Whipwreck. And some of you may have seen my What Happened to Mikey Whipwreck, What Happened to Justin Credible posts. Those are me giving you all the edge on the features that drop. But I think a lot of people don't really understand Mikey Whipwreck and his impact in ECW. He was a fan who became a member of the ring crew and would work for free just as long as he could roll around in the ring. Then he became a jobber, and then all of a sudden, Mikey Whipwreck becomes an ECW Tag Team Champion 3 times, a television champion 2 times, an ECW World Heavyweight Champion. He's beating Austin. He was their first Triple Crown champion. And then after that run, WCW came calling. WCW! throwing six figures at a guy who was on the ring crew a few years before that. Unbelievable. So we spoke about his ECW and WCW days, and he says that Perry Saturn called him up and helped him get into WCW. And the fact that WCW wanted him seemed to surprise him, but he was willing to because ECW was having issues with bounce checks. He was feeling beat up. But he says that Virgil went to Hulk Hogan and buried Mikey and Billy Kidman for having a balls-to-the-wall match right before he and Stevie Ray had a battle for the NWO black and white match, and it pissed the wrong people off. So Mikey claims that Virgil buried him. He also appeared at Joey Janela's spring break in New Orleans, and after he was either contacted by Danny DeManto or Joey Janela, he said that he admittedly did not know what a clusterfuck match was, but was familiar with MJF through Curt Hawkins and felt comfortable enough with him to pitch doing the Frankensteiner spot. Now, Mikey has seen better days. He was not in great shape for this and still did it and worked like he looked great in the ring, like as far as doing the moves. He's had to pass up doing that spot on other bookings and says usually he'll only wrestle for Greek Town Wrestling in Toronto, and other than that, he usually passes up bookings. But I asked him about the Whippersnapper, which is really the version of the stunner that took off. There was the Ace Crusher, then the Whippersnapper is the, really the one that Steve Austin took. And Steve Austin worked a program with him, so it's hard to not credit Mikey Whipwreck for that. And he said that John Cena's stunner was not good, but he put over Ember Moon's a lot. I love that. It shows you that he's still watching, and it shows you that he's got his eye on the young talent. And not only that, but a young talent who deserved being put over for having an awesome version of the finish. I like that. I didn't get any sense of bitterness or anything out of Mikey. He was a pleasure to talk to. Contract updates. As mentioned, Cain Velasquez was released just a few months with WWE. His contract was set to run through fall 2022. Now, the interesting thing is he cannot just jump back in and take a UFC fight. He exited the USADA pool and effectively retired. So if he were to go back to UFC, he would have to enter the USADA pool and spend at least 6 months in it before being approved to fight. He would have to pass 6 months of tests. USADA is still administering drug tests throughout this time of self-isolation and quarantine and all that. So it's not like something he can just jump in and do. I'm not sure his contract status with the UFC. I'm not sure if he's still signed there and still beholden to that. But if he's not, he could take a fight somewhere else. But I don't know what his contract status is. Curtis Axel released. He had been with WWE for well over a decade. He had first appeared alongside his family to help induct Mr. Perfect into the WWE Hall of Fame. And I believe in 07 or 08, he was signed to WWE. He went to FCW. He did a lot of work there. He was a member of the Nexus. You can't say they didn't give it a shot. You can't really base it on the last several years of his run in WWE. And man, 40 crept up. 40 years old crept up. Because when you think about it, my God, they signed him at like, what, 27, 28? He was a young guy when they signed him. And they put him with the new Nexus. And he got some tag title runs here and there. He got one with David Otunga and one with Bo Dallas. He got an Intercontinental title run where he was in matches with Triple H. He was teaming with Ryback. He got Paul Heyman as a manager. And then I thought, honestly, his best work was done as a member of the Miztourage. Not the B-team that followed, but the Miztourage. I thought that was a really good role for him. I hope he finds something. I hate to hear this. But man, he has been getting paid six figures for about a decade now. So I would imagine he's doing pretty well. Curtis Axel carved out a pretty good career for himself. We have probably the biggest injury update in quite a while. Kevin Owens, according to a French outlet, an ankle injury has kept him sidelined for the last month. They have needed him. WWE Raw has lacked some real star power. There has been no Brock Lesnar. There has been no Edge. There's been no Randy Orton. No AJ Styles. No Undertaker. No Kevin Owens. Nowhere to be found. Becky Lynch has not been wrestling. It has been a skeleton crew over there held together by that new Zelina faction. They need Kevin Owens, and I hope he gets better soon. But Jimmy Uso reported to have a knee injury that could keep him out 6 to 9 months. My God. If I were WWE, I would bring Jey Uso in and have him do something. Give him some sort of run. Do something with him. Don't just leave him out during that period. Get your money's worth from this guy. Even have him team with somebody else, and then the moment his brother gets back, he ditches him, turns on him. You got a heel run out of the Usos there. SmackDown's tag division is strong enough as it is where you don't have to rely on the Usos. But man, if you got one of them there, you might as well do something with them. A real bummer. I hate that. Ali, he's been off TV for 3 months now. He has not wrestled since February 7th. Mercedes Martinez has not wrestled since February 22nd. And Kyle O'Reilly was pulled from April NXT shows. We also got your stats for you. Denzel Desjardins went 0-3 in the month of April, but took on former World Heavyweight, ECW, and TNA World Champions. Liv Morgan is 7-2 in televised singles competition since returning to TV. Ruby Riott is 0-5. Liv Morgan and Ruby Riott faced off 3 times between March and April. Liv Morgan won all of those. Outside of the Super Showdown Battle Royal, Jinder Mahal had not had a cable televised match since WrestleMania 35. Before April's Jon Moxley versus Jake Hager match, the two had never faced each other in one-on-one competition. Matt Hardy and Kenny Omega are scheduled to team for the first time ever. 4 out of Otis's last 5 matches have featured Dolph Ziggler. Otis wrestled only 1 match in April. Well, it aired in April, but it was filmed in March, and wrestled no matches in February. He wrestled 3 times in March, though. Leon Ruff had his 4th appearance on WWE programming since December on Friday. He's been on Raw, SmackDown, Main Event, and NXT. Good for him. He did great. Keith Lee and Damian Priest had their 4th televised match with each other since December, but it was their first one-on-one match since last June. Daniel Bryan competed in a one-on-one match with Baron Corbin for the first time on SmackDown. They'd competed against each other in 3 tag team matches and a triple threat match since October, and Bryan went undefeated in all of them. That's it for the Backstage Report. I want to thank you guys so much for taking the time, for subscribing to us. As of now, we've had one of our best months as it relates to retaining subscriptions after the first of the month, and that means a lot to me. I hope you guys will submit some questions this week for the Q&A show. I'm going to add a few more rules to that. It's pretty free-flowing, though. I'll answer just about everything that you all have. But thank you guys so much. Check out the Weekender podcast. Check out Sour Graps. And most importantly, let the people know that you like it. Thank you all. We're out.